about Harden, but you need to accept the fact that he won't give you what you want and need, and try your best to pretend you are moving on. If you can fool him and everyone else, you will eventually believe it too, and it'll become real. Do you think I could, you know, ever really get over him? I twist my fingers in my lap. I'll go ahead and lie to you because it's what you need to hear right now. Kimberly walks over to the cabinet and pulls out two wine glasses. You need to hear a lot of bullshit and praise at this point. There is always time to face the truth later, but for now... She rummages through the drawer just below the sink and pulls out a corkscrew. Now we drink wine, and I'll tell you all kinds of breakup stories that will make yours seem like child's play. The horror movie? I ask, knowing she meant the opposite of that creepy red-headed doll. No, smartass. She smacks my thigh. I'm talking, I know women who were married for years and their husbands banged their sisters. That kind of crazy shit will make you realize you don't have it that bad. A glass full of white wine is placed in front of me, and just as I am about to object, Kimberly raises it and presses it to my lips. A bottle and a half later, I am laughing and leaning on the counter for support. Kimberly has gone through an amazing array of crazy relationships, and I finally stopped checking my phone every 10 seconds. Harden doesn't have my phone number anyway, I keep reminding myself. Of course, this is Harden we are talking about. If he wants the number, he will find a way to get it. Some of the stories Kimberly has told in the last hour seem too crazy to be true. I'm convinced that the wine has made her embellish each one just to make them worse. The woman who came home to find her husband naked in bed with the neighbor, and her husband. The too detailed story about the woman who tried to put a hit on her husband but gave the wrong picture to the hired gun, so he tried to kill her brother. Her husband ended up with a much better life than her. Then there was the man who left his wife of 20 years for a woman half his age, only to find out she was his great niece. Yuck. Yes, they stayed together. A girl was sleeping with her college professor and bragged about it to her manicurist, who, surprise, was the professor's wife. The girl failed that term. The man who married the sexy French girl who he met at the grocery store, only to find out she wasn't French. She was from Detroit and was a pretty convincing con artist. The one about the woman who, for over a year, was cheating on her husband with a man she met online. When she finally met the man, she was surprised when he turned out to be her husband. There is no way a woman caught her husband sleeping with her sister, then her mother, then her divorce attorney. There is no possible way that she then chased him around the law office, hurling her heels at his head while he ran, pantless, through the halls. I'm laughing, really laughing now, and Kimberly is holding her stomach, claiming that she saw the man a few days later with the imprint of his soon-to-be ex-wife's heel glowing in the middle of his forehead. I'm not even joking. It was a mess. The best part of this entire story is that they are remarried now. She smacks her hand against the counter, and I shake my head at the volume of her voice now that she's drunk. I'm happy to see that Smith has gone upstairs and left the loud, wine-drinking women alone, so I don't have to feel bad about confusing him with our laughter at other people's misery. Men are assholes, every single one of them. Kimberly raises her freshly refilled glass to my empty one. But truth be told, women are assholes too, so the only way for it to work is if you find an asshole you can deal with, one that makes you a little less of an asshole. Christian chooses this moment to enter the kitchen.
All this talk about assholes is traveling down the hallway.
I'd basically forgotten he was around at all. It takes me a moment to realize that he's in a wheelchair. I hear myself gasp and Kimberly looks at me, a small smile playing on her lips.
He will be fine, she assures me.
He smiles at his fiancée and she squirms in a way she always does when he looks at her like that. I'm surprised by this. I knew she was forgiving him. I just didn't know it was such a done deal, or that she could look so happy doing it.
Sorry.
She smiles down at him, and he reaches for her hips, pulling her onto his lap. He winces when her thigh touches his injured leg, and she quickly adjusts herself on the opposite leg.
It looks worse than it is,
he tells me when he notices me staring back and forth between the metal chair and the burned flesh on his leg.
It's true. He's really milking this whole thing. Kimberly teases, poking the dimple on his left cheek.
I look away.
You're here alone? Vance asks, ignoring the glare Kimberly sends him when he bites at her finger. I can't stop watching them, even though I know I won't be in their position anytime soon, if ever. Yeah, Hardin is back at his... I stop to correct myself. At Ken's. Christian looks disappointed, and Kimberly has stopped her glaring, but I feel like the hole inside me that has been covered for the last hour is starting to show itself at the mention of Hardin's name.
How is he? I really wish he would answer my calls, the little asshole.
Christian mutters. I blame the wine, but I snap at him. He has a lot going on right now. The bite in my tone is evident, and I instantly feel like a jerk. I'm sorry. I didn't mean it to sound that way. I just know he's going through a lot right now. I don't mean to be rude. I choose to ignore the smirk covering Kimberly's face as I defend Hardin. Christian shakes his head and laughs.
It's fine. I deserve it all. I know he is. I just want to talk to him, but I know he will come around when he's ready. I'll leave you ladies to it. I just wanted to see what all the laughing and screeching was about. Make sure it wasn't too much at my expense.
With that, he kisses Kimberly, swiftly but tenderly, and he wheels himself out of the room. I hold my glass out, asking for another refill.
Wait, so that means you won't be working with me anymore? Kimberly asks. You can't leave me with all those bitchy women. You're the only one I can stand, aside from Trevor's new girlfriend.
Trevor has a girlfriend? I sip the cool wine. Kimberly was right. The wine and laughter are helping. I can feel myself peering out of this shell, trying to come back to life. With each joke and absurd story, I'm finding it a little easier.
Yes, the redhead. You know, the one who runs our social media?
I try to place the woman, but I can't see past the wine dancing in my mind. I don't know her. How long have they been dating?
Only a few weeks. Get this, though.
Kimberly's eyes light up at her favorite thing, office gossip.
Christian heard them together.
I take another drink of wine, waiting for her to explain.
As in, together, together. As in, they were banging in his office. And what's even crazier is that the things he heard...
She stops to laugh.
They were kinky. I'm talking, Trevor is a total badass in bed. There was spanking, some kinky name-calling, all of that stuff.
I burst into laughter like a giddy schoolgirl, a schoolgirl who has consumed too much wine. No way! I can't imagine sweet Trevor spanking anyone. The image alone makes me laugh harder, and I shake my head, trying not to think too much into it. Trevor is handsome, very handsome, but he's just so well-mannered and sweet.
I swear, Christian was convinced he had her, like, tied to the desk or something, because when he saw him next, he was detaching something from its corners.
Kimberly waves her hands through the air, and a burst of cold wine shoots up and out my nose. After this glass, I'm cutting myself off. Where is Hardin, the alcohol authority, when I need him? Hardin. My heart begins to race, and my laughter is quickly derailed until Kimberly adds another dirty detail to the story.
I've heard he keeps a crop in his office.
Crop? I ask, lowering my voice.
Writing crop. Google it,
she laughs. I can't believe it. He's so sweet and gentle. He couldn't possibly tie a woman to his desk and have his way with her. I just can't picture it. My traitorous and wine-controlled mind starts imagining Hardin and desks and ties and spanking.
Who has sex in their office anyway? My God, those walls are paper thin.
I feel my mouth fall open. Real images. Memories of Hardin bending me over my desk flash through my mind, and my already heated skin flushes and burns. Kimberly shoots me a knowing smile and tilts her head back.
I guess the same people who have sex in people's home gyms, she accuses with a giggle.
I ignore her despite the burning embarrassment I feel. Back to Trevor, I say, hiding as much of my face behind my glass as I can manage.
I knew he would be a freak. Men who wear suits every day are always freaks.
Only in those smutty novels, I counter, thinking of a book I've been planning to read but haven't gotten around to yet.
Those stories have to come from somewhere, don't they?
She winks at me.
I keep walking by Trevor's office, hoping to hear him nailing her, but no such luck. Yet.
The ridiculousness of this entire night has made me feel light in a way I haven't felt in so long. I try to grasp this feeling and hold it as tightly to my chest as I can. I don't want it to slip away.
Who knew Trevor was such a freak, yeah?
She wiggles her eyebrows and I shake my head. Fucking Trevor, I say, and wait in silence as Kimberly bursts into loud laughter.
Fucking Trevor, she screeches, and I join her, thinking of the source of the nickname as we take turns repeating it in our best impressions of its creator.
Chapter 48. Harden. This day has been long. Too damn long, and I'm ready to sleep. After the heart-to-heart with Ken, I'm worn out. That, followed by Sarah, Sonia, who cares, whatever the hell her name is, and Landon eye-fucking her across the dinner table, has bored me to death. Even though I wish Tessa hadn't left without telling me, I can't say that out loud because she doesn't owe me any type of explanation. I played nice, the way I promised Tessa I could, and ate my dinner in silence as Karen and my dad, or whoever he is, watched me with caution, waiting for me to explode or ruin their dinner somehow. But I didn't. I stayed quiet and chewed each bite. I even kept my elbows off the ugly-ass table cover thing that Karen thinks adds a nice pastel spring touch, or some shit. But it doesn't. It's hideous, and someone should burn it when she's not looking. I felt a little better. Awkward as fuck. But a little better after talking with my dad. I find it amusing that I keep defaulting to calling Ken my dad now, whereas when I was a teen, I could barely speak his name without scowling, or wishing he hadn't left just so I could punch him. Now that I understand, well, somewhat understand, how he felt and why he did what he did, some of the anger I held inside me for so long has sort of fizzled. It was weird, though, feeling that slip from my body. I've heard it explained in novels. Forgiveness, they call it. But I've never felt it until tonight. I'm not quite convinced that I like the feeling, but I'll admit it helps distract me from the constant ache of missing Tessa. Sort of. I feel better. Happier? I don't know. But I can't stop thinking of the future now. A future where Tessa and I shop for carpet and shelves, or whatever married people do. The only married people I know who can tolerate each other are Ken and Karen, and I have no clue what they do together, aside from making babies in their 40s. I immaturely cringe at the thought and pretend that I wasn't just thinking about their sex life. Truth be told, thinking of the future is much more fun than I ever imagined. I never expected anything from the future, or the present, before. I always knew I would be alone, so I didn't bother entertaining stupid plans or wishes. Up until 8 months ago, I didn't know there could be someone like Tessa. I had no clue that this obnoxious blonde was walking around, waiting to turn my entire life upside down by driving me absolutely insane and making me love her more than I love breathing. Hell, if I had known she was out there, I wouldn't have wasted my time fucking every chick that I could. I wasn't running on anything before. No driving force with blue-gray eyes was helping me, guiding me through my fucked-up life. So I made too many mistakes. And now I have to work harder than most at trying to right those wrongs. If I could take it back, I wouldn't have touched another girl. Not one. And if I had known just how good touching Tessa would be, I would have been preparing myself, counting down the days until she barged into my room at that frat house, touching all my books and things after I explicitly told her not to. The only thing that's keeping me remotely in control of myself is the hope that she will come around eventually. She will see that this time I'm not going to take my words back. I will marry her ass, even if I have to drag her down the aisle. This is another of our problems, these pushy thoughts. As much as I'll deny them to her face, I can't help but smile now at the vision of her in a white dress, scowling and yelling at me, as I literally drag her by her feet down a carpeted aisle, while some bullshit song is played on a harp or some other instrument that no one uses outside of weddings and funerals. If I had her number, I would text her just to make sure she's okay. She doesn't want me to have it, though. It took a lot of control not to snatch Landon's phone from his pocket and just steal it after dinner. I'm lying in this bed when I should be driving to Seattle. Should be, could be, need to be, but can't. I need to give her a little space, or she'll pull farther away from me. I hold my phone up in the dark and scroll through the pictures of her. If images of memories are all I will have for a while, I'm going to need more pictures. 722 isn't enough. Instead of continuing down the path of an obsessive stalker, I climb out of bed and pull on some pants. I don't think Landon or pregnant Karen would appreciate seeing me naked. Well, maybe they would. I smile at my thoughts and take a moment to come up with my plan. Landon will be stubborn, I know it, but he's easy to break. By the second embarrassing joke I crack about his new crush, he'll be shouting Tessa's number and blushing like a kindergartner. I knock twice, giving the kid fair warning before pushing the door open. He's asleep, lying on his back with a book on his chest. Fucking Harry Potter. Should have known. I hear a noise and see a little flash, as if a sign from above. His phone screen lights up, and I grab it from his nightstand. Tessa's name in the beginning of a text. Hey, Landon, you up? Because... The preview doesn't show the rest. I need to see the rest. I circle my neck, trying not to allow the jealousy to take over. Why is she texting him so late? I try to guess his passcode, but he's harder to read than Tessa. Hers was so obvious and comical, really. I knew that, like me, she would be afraid to forget the thing and choose 1234. That's our password for everything. PIN numbers, pay-per-view code on our cable box, anything that requires numbers. That's what we always use. See? We are practically fucking married anyway. We could be wed together at the same time some hacker steals our identities. Ha! I smack Landon with a pillow from his bed, and he groans. Wake up, dickhead!
Go away.
I need Tessa's number. Smack.
No.
Smack. Smack. Harder smack.
Ah!
He whines, sitting up.
Fine, I'll give you the number.
He reaches for his phone, which I place in his hand while watching the numbers he presses, just in case. He hands me the phone once it's unlocked. I thank him and type her number in my phone. The relief I feel as I press save is pathetic, but I don't care. I smack Landon again with the pillow, just for good measure, and leave the room. I think I hear him cussing at me until I close the door, laughing. I could get used to this feeling, this hope-like feeling, as I type in a simple goodnight text to my girl and wait anxiously for her to reply. Everything seems to be getting better for me, finally, and the last step is Tessa's forgiveness. I just need a sliver of the hope she has always had for me to return. Harden? The message reads. Fuck, I was beginning to think she was going to ignore me. No, not Harden, just Harden. I decide to start the conversation with teasing, even though I want to beg her to come back from Seattle, or not to freak out if I show up there in the middle of the night.
Sorry, I can't type on this keyboard. It's too touchy.
I can picture her lying in her bed in Seattle, squinting and frowning as she uses her index finger to tap each letter.
Yeah, iPhones, huh? Your old keyboard was massive, so I can see why you were having a problem.
She responds with a smiley face, and I'm impressed and amused by her newfound use of the emojis.
I fucking hate them, and have always refused to use them. But here I am rushing to download the shit so I can respond with a matching smiley face.
You still there?
She asks, just as I send a matching face.
Yeah. Why are you up so late?
I saw that you texted Landon. I shouldn't have sent that. A few seconds pass, and she sends an image of a tiny wine glass. I should have known she was hanging out with Kim after all. Wine, huh? I send, accompanied by something that looks like a surprised face, I think. Why are there so many of these damn things? When would anyone ever need to send a picture of a tiger, for fuck's sake? Being curious and a little high off the attention she's giving me, I send the damn tiger and laugh to myself when she responds with a camel. I laugh each time she sends me a stupid little image that no one could possibly have a use for. I love that she caught on, that she knew I sent the tiger because it literally makes no damn sense, and now we are playing a send-the-most-random-emoji game, and I'm lying here in the dark, alone, laughing so hard that my stomach actually hurts.
I ran out,
she says, after about 5 minutes of back and forth.
Me too.
Are you tired?
Yes, I drank too much wine.
Did you have fun? I'm surprised when I want her to say yes, that she did have a good time, even though I wasn't a part of her night.
Yes, I did. Are you okay? I hope everything went well with your father.
It did. Maybe we can talk about it when I get to Seattle. I accompany my pushy message with a heart and the picture of what looks like a skyscraper.
Maybe.
I'm sorry I was such a shitty boyfriend. You deserve better than me, but I love you. I send the message before I can stop myself. It's true, and I just can't help saying it now. I've made the mistake of keeping my feelings for her inside, and that's why she's so quick to doubt my promises now.
Too much wine in my brain for this conversation. Christian heard Trevor having sex in his office.
I roll my eyes at his name on my screen. Fucking Trevor. Fucking Trevor.
That's what I said. I ottled Kim that same things.
Too many typos to read. Go to sleep. Text me tomorrow, I send. Then start a new message. Please. Please text me tomorrow. A smile creeps across my face when she sends a picture of a cell phone, a sleepy face, and that damn tiger. Chapter 49. Harden. The familiar voice of Nate echoes through the narrow hallway.
Scott!
Fuck. I knew I wouldn't make it through this shit without seeing one of them. I came to campus to talk to my professors. I wanted to make sure my father could drop my last assignments off to them. Having friends or parents in high places really does help, and I'm given permission to miss the remainder of classes for this semester. I have been missing so many anyway, there won't be much of a difference. Nate's blonde hair is longer now, pushed up into some sort of messy spike in the front.
Hey, man, I get the feeling you were trying to avoid me just now, he says, looking me straight in the face.
Perceptive, aren't you?
I shrug. No point in lying.
I always hated your big words,
he laughs. I could have done without seeing him today, or ever again. It's nothing against him. I always sort of liked him more than any of my other friends. But I'm over this shit. He takes my silence for another opening to speak.
I haven't seen you on campus in forever. Aren't you graduating soon?
Yeah, middle of next month. He follows next to me at a slow pace.
Logan is, too. You're going to walk, right?
Hell no, I laugh.
Did you really just ask me that?
Tessa's scowl flashes in my head, and I bite down on my lip to keep a smile away. I know she wants me to walk at my graduation, but there's no way in hell I'm going to. Maybe I should at least consider it.
Okay, he says. Then he points to my hand. What's with the cast?
I lift it a little and look at it. Long story. One that I'm not going to tell you. See, Tessa, I have learned some self-control. Even though I'm talking to you inside of my head and you're not even here. Okay, so maybe I'm crazy still. But I'm being nice-ish to people. You would be proud. Fuck, I've got it so bad.
Nate shakes his head and holds the door open for me as we walk out of the administration building. So, how are things? He asks, always having been the most talkative of the bunch. Fine. How's she?
My boots stop moving against the concrete sidewalk, and he takes a step back, holding his hands in the air in defense.
I'm only asking as a friend. I haven't seen either of you, and you stopped taking our calls a while ago. Zet's the only one that talks to Tessa.
Is he trying to piss me off?
Zet doesn't talk to her,
I snap, annoyed that I let Nate and his mention of Zed get under my skin so easily. Nate lifts his hand to his forehead, a nervous gesture.
I wasn't saying it like that, but he told us about her dad and he said he was at the funeral, so...
So nothing. He's nothing to her. Move on.
This conversation is going nowhere, and I'm reminded why I don't waste my time hanging out with any of them anymore. All right. If I look over at him, I know he will be rolling his eyes. But then I'm surprised when he says with a hint of emotion, I never did anything to you, you know? When I turn to him, sure enough, his expression matches his voice. I'm not trying to be a dick, I tell him, feeling a tiny bit guilty. He's a nice guy, nicer than me and most of our friends. His friends, not mine anymore. He looks a little past me.
Seems like it.
Well, I'm not. I'm just over the bullshit, you know? I face him. I'm over all the shit. The parties, the drinking, the smoking, the hookups. I'm just over all of it. So I'm not trying to be an asshole toward you personally, but I'm just over all that shit.
Nate pulls a cigarette from his pocket, and the only noise between us is the click of his lighter. It feels so long ago that I would walk around campus with him and the rest of our group. It feels so long ago that talking shit about people and nursing hangovers was my morning routine. It feels so long ago that my life revolved around anything other than her.
I get what you're saying, he says after taking a drag. I can't believe you're saying it, but I do get it. And I hope you know that I'm sorry for my part in the shit with Steph and Dan. I knew they were up to something, but I had no clue what.
The last thing I want to think about is Steph and Dan and the shit they pulled.
Yeah, well, we could go on and on about it, but the outcome would be the same. They won't ever be close enough to even dare to breathe the same air as Tessa. Steph is gone, anyway.
Gone where?
Louisiana.
Good. I want her as far away from Tessa as possible. I hope Tessa texts me soon. She sort of agreed to today, and I'm holding her to that. If she doesn't soon, I'm sure I'll break down and text her first. I'm trying to give her space, but our emoji conversation last night was the most fun I've had since, well, since I was inside her only hours before. I still can't believe what a lucky son of a bitch I am that she allowed me near her. I was a dick afterward, but that's beside the point.
Tristan went with her,
Nate tells me. The wind is picking up, and the entire campus just seems like a better fucking place now that I know Steph has left the state.
He's a dumbass, I say. No, he's not, Nate says, defending his friend. He really likes her. Well, loves her, I guess.
I snort. Like I said, he's a dumbass.
Maybe he knows her in a way that we don't.
His words make me laugh, a quiet and annoyed laugh. What else is there to know? She's a crazy bitch. I can't believe he's actually defending Steph. Well, Tristan, who is dating Steph again, despite that she's a fucking psycho who tried to hurt Tessa.
I don't know, man, but Tristan's my boy, so I don't judge him,
Nate says, then looks at me coolly.
Most people would probably say the same shit about you and Tessa.
You better be comparing me and Steph, not Tessa and Steph.
Obviously.
He rolls his eyes and ashes his cigarette beside him.
You should come with me to the house, just for old time's sake. There won't be a lot of people, just a few of us.
Dan? My phone vibrates in my pocket, and I pull it out to find Tessa's name on the screen.
I don't know, but I can make sure he doesn't come around while you're there.
We are standing in the parking lot now. My car is only a few feet away, and his motorcycle is parked in the front row. I still can't believe he hasn't wrecked the damn thing. He dropped the piece of shit at least 5 times the day he got his permit for it, and I know his ass doesn't wear a helmet while speeding across town.
I'm good. I have plans anyway.
I lie as I send back a hello to Tessa. I'm hoping my plans could involve talking to Tessa for hours. I almost agreed to go by that damn frat house, but that my old friends still hang out with Dan reminds me exactly why I stopped hanging out with them to begin with.
Are you sure? We could hang one last time before you graduate and knock your girl up. You know that's coming, right?
He teases. His tongue flashes in the sun, and I push his arm back.
You got your tongue pierced?
I ask, absent-mindedly running my finger over the small scar next to my eyebrow.
Yeah, like a month ago. I still can't believe you took those rings out. A nice save on avoiding the second part of what I said.
He laughs, and I try to remember what it was that he said. Something about my girl and pregnant.
Oh, hell no. No one will be getting pregnant, asshole. Go to hell for even trying to curse me with that shit.
I shove at his shoulder, and he laughs harder. Marriage is one thing. Babies, a totally fucking other thing. I glance down at my phone. As nice as it is to play catch-up with Nate, I want to focus on Tessa and her messages, especially since she wrote something about going to the doctor. I type out a quick reply to her.
There's Logan right there.
Nate pulls me from my phone, and I follow his eyes to Logan, walking toward us.
Shit,
Nate adds, and my eyes focus on the chick walking next to Logan. She looks familiar, but not quite. Molly. It's Molly, but her hair is black now instead of pink. My luck today is remarkable, really.
Well, that's my cue. I got shit to do,
I say, attempting to avoid the potential disaster walking in my direction. Just as I turn to go, Molly leans into Logan, and he wraps his arm around her waist.
What the fuck? Them, I gape. Those two. Fucking.
I look at Nate. The fucker doesn't even try to hide his amusement.
Yep, for a while now. They didn't tell anyone until about 3 weeks ago. I caught on early, though. I knew something was up when she stopped being such a bitch all the time.
Molly flips her black hair and smiles at Logan. I don't even remember her smiling. Ever. I can't stand her. But I don't hate her the way I used to. She did help Tessa.
Don't even think about leaving until you tell me why you've been avoiding us.
Logan's voice shoots across the lot.
I had better shit to do.
I yell back, checking my phone again. I want to know why Tessa is at the doctor again. Her last text avoided the question, and I need to know. I'm sure she's okay. I'm just being a nosy asshole. Molly's lips curl into a smirk.
Better shit.
like fucking Tessa's brains out in Seattle.
And just like old times, I raise my middle finger at her.
Fuck off!
Don't be such a pussy. We all know you two haven't stopped fucking since you met.
She taunts me. I look at Logan in that, get her to shut her mouth or I will, way. But he shrugs his shoulders.
You two make a grand couple.
I raise a brow at my old friend, and it's his turn to raise a finger to me.
At least she's leaving you alone now, right?
Logan fires back, and I laugh. He's got a point there.
Where is she anyway?
Molly asks.
Not that I care. I don't like her.
We know,
Nate says, and Molly rolls her eyes.
She doesn't like you either. No one does, actually.
I remind her mockingly.
Touché.
She grins and leans into Logan's shoulder. Nate may have been right. She does seem less bitchy. A little.
Well, nice to see you guys, really.
I sarcastically remark and turn to walk away.
I have better shit to do, though. So have fun doing whatever you're doing. And Logan, you really should keep fucking her. It seems to be doing the trick.
I nod at them and climb into my car. Just as I shut the door, I hear a mixture of, he's in a better mood, and pussy whipped, and I'm happy for him. The weirdest part was that the last one came from the evil bitch herself.
Chapter 50. Tessa. I'm uncomfortable, nervous, and a little cold sitting here dressed in only a thin hospital gown inside a small exam room that mirrors the others lining the hall. They should add some color in the rooms. Just a little paint would do, or even a framed photograph like in every other exam room I've ever been inside. Except this one. This one is nothing but white. White walls, white desk, white floor. I should have taken Kimberly up on her offer to accompany me today. I'm fine on my own, but having a little support today, even just a little of Kimberly's humor, would have helped calm my nerves. I woke up this morning feeling much better than I deserve, no trace of a hangover present. I felt sort of good. I fell asleep with a wine and Hardin-influenced smile on my face, and I slept more peacefully than I have in weeks. I keep going round and round in my head, as usual, when it comes to Hardin. Reading and rereading our playful conversation from last night hasn't failed to make me smile, no matter how many times I look through the messages. I like this nice, patient, playful Hardin. I would love to get to know that Hardin better, but I'm afraid that he won't be around long enough to do so. I won't be around long enough either. I'm leaving for New York with Landon, and the closer the date comes, the more restless the fluttering inside me becomes. I can't tell if it's a good flutter or bad, but it's out of control today, and in this moment, it's multiplied. My feet are dangling over the edge of this uncomfortable examination bed, and I can't decide whether I want to keep my legs crossed or not. It's a trivial decision, but it does the job at distracting me from the cold temperature and awkward butterflies attacking my stomach. I pull my phone from my purse and type a message to Hardin, just to keep occupied while I wait, of course. A simple hey is all I send and wait while crossing and uncrossing my legs.
I'm glad you text me because I was only going to wait another hour before I text you,
he replies. I smile at the screen. Even though I shouldn't like the demand behind his words, I do. He's being so honest lately, and I'm loving it. I'm at the doctor, and I've been waiting a while. How are you today? He responds quickly.
Stop being so formal. Why are you at the doctor? Are you okay? You didn't tell me you were going. I'm okay, don't worry about that, though I am here with Nate, who's trying to get me to hang out later. Like that'll happen.
I hate the way my chest aches at the thought of Hardin's hanging out with his old friends. It's none of my business what he does or who he spends his time with, but I can't shake the sick feeling that comes over me when thinking about the memories associated with them. Seconds later,
not that you needed to tell me, but you could have. I would have come with you.
It's okay. I'm okay alone. I find myself wishing I would have given him the option.
You've been alone too much since I've met you.
Not really. I don't know what else to say because my head is fuzzy, and I'm feeling sort of happy that he's concerned for me and being so open. The word liar is paired with a pair of jeans and a ball of fire. I cover my mouth with my hand to stifle the noise as the doctor enters the exam room. Doctor's here. I'll text you later.
Let me know if he doesn't keep his hands to himself.
I tuck my phone away and try to wipe the giddy smile from my face as Dr. West pulls a latex glove over each of his hands.
How have you been?
How have I been? He doesn't want to know the answer to that, nor does he have the time to listen. He's a medical doctor, not a psychiatrist. Good, I reply, cringing at the thought of small talk as he positions himself to examine me.
I ran the blood work from your last appointment, but there wasn't anything triggering concern there.
I let out a breath of relief.
However,
he says ominously, and pauses. I should have known there would be a however.
As I looked over the images from your exam, I concluded that your cervix is very narrow, and from what I can see, very short. I'd like to show you what I mean, if that's okay.
Dr. West adjusts his glasses, and I nod in agreement. Short and narrow cervix. I did enough research online to know what that means. 10 long minutes later, he's shown me in great detail the things I already knew. I've known what he would conclude with. I knew the moment that I left his office 2.5 weeks ago. As I get myself dressed, his words play on repeat through my mind. Not impossible, but highly unlikely. There are other options. Adoption is a route many people choose to go. You're still really young. As you get older, you and your partner can explore the best options for you. I'm sorry, Ms. Young. Without thinking, I dial Hardin's number on the way to my car. I'm greeted by his voicemail 3 times before I force myself to put my phone away. I don't need him or anyone right now. I can deal with this on my own. I already knew this. I have already dealt with this in my mind and filed it away. It doesn't matter that Hardin didn't answer the phone. I'm fine. Who cares if I can't get pregnant? I'm only 19, and all of the other plans I've made have fallen through so far anyway. It's only fitting that this last piece of my ultimate plan is blown to pieces, too. The drive back to Kimberly's is long because of congested traffic again. I hate driving, I've decided. I hate people who have road rage. I hate the way it always rains here. I hate the way young girls blare loud music with their windows rolled down, even in the rain. Just roll your windows up. I hate the way I'm trying to stay positive and not turn into the pathetic Tessa I was last week. I hate that it's so hard to think of anything except that my body betrayed me in the most final and intimate way. I was born this way, Dr. West says. Of course I was. Just like my mother, no matter how perfect I try to be, it will never happen. There is a silver lining here, a sick one, in that at least I won't pass any of the traits I got from her to a child. I suppose I can't blame my mother for my faulty cervix, but I want to. I want to blame someone or something, but I can't. This is the way the world works. If you want something bad enough, it gets stripped away and held out of reach, just the way Hardin is. No Hardin and no babies. The two would never have mixed anyway, but it was nice to pretend I could have the luxury of both. As I walk into Christian's house, I'm relieved to find I'm home alone. Not home, but here. Without checking my phone, I strip down and get into the shower. I don't know how long I stay in there, watching the water circle the drain over and over. The water is cold when I finally climb out and dress myself in the t-shirt of Hardin's that he left for me in my suitcase when he sent me away in London. I'm just lying here now in this empty bed, and by the time I start to wish Kimberly were home, I get a text from her saying she and Christian are staying overnight downtown and Smith will be at the sitters all night. I have the entire house to myself and nothing to do, no one to talk to. No one now, not even a little baby later to care for and love. I keep pitying myself and I know it's ridiculous, but I can't seem to stop it.
Have some wine and rent a movie. Our treat.
Kimberly responds to my text wishing her fun for the night. My phone starts to ring as soon as I send my thanks to her. Hardin's number flashes on the screen, and I debate whether to answer. By the time I reach the wine fridge in the kitchen, he's routed to my voicemail, and I've reserved a ticket to Pity Party Central. A bottle of wine later, I'm in the living room halfway through a terrible action film that I rented about a Marine-turned-nanny-turned-mighty-alien-hunter. It seemed to be the only movie on the list that had nothing to do with love, babies, or anything happy. When did I become such a downer? I take another drink of wine straight from the bottle. I gave up on the wine glass 5 blown-up spaceships ago. My phone rings again, and this time, as I look at the screen, my drunken thumbs accidentally answer for me.
Chapter 51. Harden. Tess? I say into the phone, trying to hide my panic. She's been ignoring my calls all night, and I've been going insane wondering what I could have done wrong. What else I could have done wrong this time.
Yeah?
Her voice is cloudy, slow, and off. With one word, I can tell she's been drinking. Wine again? I chuckle. Should I lecture you yet? I tease her, but only get silence on the line. Tess?
Yeah?
What's wrong?
Nothing. I'm just watching a movie.
With Kimberly? My stomach twists at the possibility of anyone else being there with her.
Myself. I'm alone here in this big house.
Her voice is flat, even as she exaggerates her words.
Where are Kimberly and Vance?
I shouldn't be this worried, but her tone has me on edge.
Out for the night. Smith, too. I'm just here watching a movie alone. Story of my life, right?
She laughs, but there's nothing behind it. No emotion at all.
Tessa, what's going on? How much did you drink?
She sighs into the phone, and I swear I can literally hear her gulping more wine.
Tessa, answer me.
I'm fine. I'm allowed to drink, right, Dad?
She tries to joke, but the way she says that last word gives me a chill. If you want to get technical, you aren't actually allowed to drink. Not legally, anyway. I'm the last person to lecture her. It's my fault she started drinking so regularly anyway. But this burning paranoia is clawing at the pit of my stomach right now. She's drinking alone, and she sounds sad enough that I jump to my feet.
Yeah.
How much did you drink?
I text Vance, hoping he'll respond.
Not too much. I'm fine. You know what's weird?
Tessa slurs. I grab my keys. Damn Seattle for being so fucking far.
What's that?
I push my feet into my Vans. Boots take too much time, and time is something I can't afford right now.
It's weird how someone can be a good person, but bad things just keep happening to them. You know?
Fuck. I text Vance again, this time telling him to get his ass home. Now.
Yeah, I do know.
It's not fair the way that works. I hate that she's feeling this way. She's a good person, the best I've ever met, and she somehow ended up being surrounded by a bunch of fuck-ups, me included. Who am I kidding? I'm the worst offender.
Maybe I shouldn't be a good person anymore.
What? No. No, no, no. She shouldn't be talking like this, thinking like this.
No, don't think like that.
I wave an impatient hand at Karen, who is standing in the doorway of the kitchen, wondering where I am running off to this late, I'm sure.
I try not to, but I can't help it. I don't know how to stop.
What happened today?
It's hard to believe that I'm talking to my Tessa, the same girl who always sees the best in everyone, herself too. She has always been so positive, so happy, and now she's not. She sounds so hopeless, so defeated. She sounds like me. My blood runs cold in my veins. I knew this would happen. I knew she wouldn't be the same after I got my claws into her. I somehow knew that after me she would be different. I hoped it wouldn't be true.
but tonight it sure as hell seems that way.
Nothing important,
she lies. Vance still hasn't answered me. He better be driving home. Tessa, tell me what's wrong. Please.
Nothing. Just karma catching up to me, I guess.
She mumbles, and the sound of a corks being popped echoes through the silence on the line.
Karma for what? Are you insane? You've never done anything to deserve any of the shit that's happened to you.
She doesn't say anything.
Tessa, I think you should stop drinking for the night. I'm on my way to Seattle. I know you need space, but I'm getting worried about you, and Well, I can't stay away. I never could. Yeah.
She isn't even listening.
I don't like you drinking this much anymore,
I say, knowing she won't hear me.
Yeah.
I'm on my way. Get a bottle of water, okay?
Yeah, a little bottle.
The drive to Seattle has never seemed this fucking long, and because of the distance between us, I finally see it. This cycle that Tessa always bitches about. It's a cycle that ends here. This is the last damn time I'll be driving to another city to be close to her. No more endless fucking bullshit. No more running from my problems, and no more fucking excuses. No more long-ass drives across the damn state of Washington because I ran far away. Chapter 52. Harden. I've called 49 times. 49 fucking times. 49! Do you know how many rings that is? A fucking lot. Too many to count, or at least I can't think clearly enough to count them. But if I could, it would be a massive amount of fucking rings. If I make it through the next 3 minutes, I plan on ripping the front door off the damn hinges and smashing Tessa's phone, the one she apparently doesn't know how to answer, against the wall. Okay, so maybe I shouldn't smash her phone against the wall. Maybe I'll accidentally step on it a few times until the screen cracks under my weight. Maybe. She's going to get a goddamn earful, that's for fucking sure. I haven't heard from her in the last couple hours, and she has no fucking idea how torturous the last few hours of driving have been. I go 20 over the speed limit to make it to Seattle as fast as possible. When I near the place, it's 3 in the damn morning, and Tessa, Vance, and Kimberly are all on my shit list. Maybe I should smash all 3 of their phones, since they obviously have forgotten how to answer the fucking things. As I reach the gate, I begin to panic, even more than I already have been. What if they decided to close their security gate? What if they changed the code? Do I even remember the fucking code? Of course not. Will they answer when I call to ask the code? Of course not. What if they aren't answering because something happened to Tessa, and they took her to the hospital, and she isn't okay, and they don't have service, and... But then I see the gate is open, and I'm a little annoyed by that too. Why wouldn't Tessa turn on the security system when she's here alone? As I drive up the winding road, I see that hers is the only car parked in front of the massive house. Good to know that Vance is here when I need him. Some fucking friend he is. Father, not friend. Fuck, right now he's neither, really. When I step out of my car and approach the front door, my anger and anxiety grow. The way she was talking, the way she sounded, it was like she wasn't in control of her own actions. The door is unlocked. Of course it is. And I make my way through the living room and down the hall. Hands shaking, I push the door to her bedroom open, and my chest tightens when I find her bed empty. It's not only empty, it's untouched, perfectly made, the corners folded in that way that's impossible to recreate. I've tried it. It's impossible to make a bed like Tessa can.
Tessa!
I call as I walk into the bathroom across the hall.
I keep my eyes closed as I turn the light on. Not hearing anything, I open my eyes. Nothing. My breath is released in a heavy pant, and I move to the next room. Where the fuck is she?
Tess!
I yell again, louder this time. After searching nearly the entire fucking mansion, I can barely breathe. Where is she? The only rooms left are Vance's bedroom and a locked room upstairs. I'm not sure if I want to open that door. I'll check the patio and yard, and if she's not there, I have no fucking clue what I will do.
Teresa! Where the hell are you? This isn't funny! I swear!
I stop yelling as I take in the curled-up ball on the patio lounge chair. Approaching, I see that Tessa's knees are tucked up to her stomach and her arms are wrapped around her chest, as if she fell asleep while trying to hold herself together. All of my anger is dissolved when I kneel down beside her. I push her blonde hair away from her face and will myself not to burst into fucking hysterics now that I know she's okay. Fuck, I was so worried about her. With my pulse racing, I lean into her and run my thumb along her bottom lip. I don't know why I did that, actually. It just sort of happened. But I sure as hell don't regret it when her eyes flutter open and she groans.
Why are you outside?
I ask, my voice loud and strained. She winces, clearly put off by the volume of my words.
Why aren't you inside? I've been worried fucking sick for you. Going over every possible scenario in my head for hours now.
I want to say.
Thank God you were asleep,
comes out instead.
I've been calling you. I was worried about you.
She sits up, holding her neck as if her head might fall off.
Harden?
Yes, Harden.
She squints in the dark and rubs her neck. When she moves to stand, an empty bottle of wine falls to the concrete patio and cracks in half.
Sorry,
she apologizes, bending down to try to pick up the broken glass. I gently push her hand away and wrap my fingers around hers.
Don't touch that.
I'll get it later. Let's go inside. I help her stand.
How'd you get here?
Her speech is stunted, and I don't even want to know how much wine she drank after the line went dead. I saw at least 4 empty bottles in the kitchen. I drove. How else?
All the way here? What time is it?
My eyes follow down her body. Her body that's covered in only a t-shirt. My t-shirt. She notices my stare and begins to tug at the ends of the shirt to cover her bare thighs.
I only wear...
She trails off, stuttering.
I'm only wearing it now, just once,
she says, making little to no sense at all. It's fine. I want you to wear it. Let's get inside.
I like it out here,
she quietly says, staring off into the darkness. It's too cold. We're going inside. I reach for her hand, but she pulls away.
Okay, okay.
If you want to stay out here, that's okay. But I'm staying with you, I say, redirecting my demand. She nods and leans against the railing. Her knees are shaking and her face is colorless. What happened tonight? She stays silent, still staring. After a moment, she turns to me.
Don't you ever feel like your life has turned into one big joke?
Daily. I shrug, unsure where the hell this conversation is going, but hating the sadness behind her eyes. Even in the dark, the sadness burns low, blue and deep, haunting those bright eyes that I love so much.
Well, me too.
No, you are the positive one here, the happy one. I'm the cynical asshole, not you.
It's exhausting being happy, you know?
Not really.
I take a step closer to her.
I'm not really the poster child for sunshine and happiness, in case you haven't noticed, I say, trying to lighten the mood, and I'm granted a half-drunk, half-amused smile. I wish you would just tell me what is going on with her lately. I don't know how much I can do for her, but this is my fault. All of this is my fault. The unhappiness inside her is my burden to bear, not hers. She lifts her arm to rest it on the wooden plank in front of her, but misses and stumbles, nearly smacking face first into the umbrella attached to a patio table. I wrap my hand around her elbow to steady her, and she begins to lean into me. Could we go inside now? You need to sleep off all the wine you've had.
I don't remember falling asleep.
That's probably because it's more like you passed out than fell asleep. I point to the broken wine bottle a few feet away.
Don't try and scold me,
she snaps and backs away. I'm not. My hands rise in innocence, and I want to scream because of the irony of this whole fucking situation. Tessa's the drunk one, and I'm the sober voice of reason.
I'm sorry,
she sighs.
I can't think.
I watch as she lowers herself to the ground and brings her knees to her chest again. She raises her head to look up at me.
Can I talk to you about something?
Of course.
And you'll be completely honest?
I'll try. She seems to be okay with that.